There were 15,000 people in Claypole, but only one actress. She kept a milliner's shop. My name is Sprake. I kept the watchmaker and jeweller's shop next door to Miss Portia for 15 years. During all that time, she never spoke to me. I'm not sure that she ever spoke to anyone. My wife and I were a decent, respectable, devoted couple, Wesleyans, not above speaking to anyone, but we were never good enough for Miss Porteous. But that was her affair. If she hadn't been so standoffish, she might have been alive today. As it is, she's dead, and she died, as everybody knows, on the front page of the newspapers. No one in Claypole knew much about Miss Porteous. We knew she'd been an actress, but where she'd been an actress and when, nobody knew. She looked like an actress. She was tall and very haughty, and her hair, once blonde, was something of the colour of tobacco-stained moustaches. Her lips were red and bitter, and with her haughty face she looked like a cold, nasty woman in a play. She dressed just for show, exactly the opposite of every other woman in Claypole. In winter she came out in chiffon, and in summer you would see her walking across the golf course, not speaking to anyone, in great fox furs, something the colour of her own hair. Her shop was just the same. At a time when every milliner, draper and Claypole used to cram as much into the shop window as possible, Miss Porteous introduced that style of one hat on a stand and a vase of flowers on a length of velvet, but somehow it never quite came off. The solitary hat looked rather like Miss Porteous herself, lonely and haughty and out of place. The back ways of her shop and ours faced on to each other. The gardens were divided by a partition of boards and fencing, but we could see into Miss Porteous's bathroom from ours. You could even see Miss Porteous at her toilet, but you never saw anyone else there. Then one day we did see someone else there. My wife came scuffling into the shop and said that she'd seen a man in Miss Porteous's backyard. "Well, what about it?" I said. "Perhaps that's what she wants, a man or two," I said. I was busy and I thought no more about it, but my wife did. While she was arranging the bedroom curtains, she saw the man several times. He was middle-aged, and he wore a yellow tie. That night, when I went to bed, the light was burning in Miss Porteous's bathroom, but I couldn't see Miss Porteous. Next morning, the light was still burning. I said, "Hello." Miss Porteous left the light on all night. Then, when I went up at midday, the light was still on, and it was still on that afternoon, and it was on all that night. My wife was scared. But I said, "Oh, it's Thursday, and she's taken the day off and gone up to London." But the light went on burning all the next day, and it was still burning late that night. By that time, I was puzzled myself. I went and tried Miss Porteous's shop door. It was locked, but there was really nothing strange about that. It was 11 o'clock at night and ought to have been locked. Well, we went to bed, but my wife couldn't sleep. At last, she jumped up in bed. "You've got to get a ladder out and climb up and see if everything's all right in Miss Porteous's bathroom," she said. Well, I heaved our ladder out and then ran it up to Miss Porteous's bathroom window, and then I climbed up. What I saw through the bathroom window was bad enough, but it was only when I had telephoned to the police station and we'd forced an entrance that I saw how really terrible it was. Miss Porteous was lying on the bathroom floor with a bullet wound in her chest. We banged the door against her head as we went in. She was in a pink nightgown, and the blood had made a little rosette on her chest. The next morning, all Claypole knew that Miss Porteous had been murdered, and by afternoon, the whole of England knew. The reporter from the Argus, the local paper, came rushing round to see me before 7 o'clock, so I made a statement. It was just a plain statement, and every word of it was true. Then, just before dinner, I saw three men with cameras on the opposite side of the street. They took pictures of Miss Porteous's shop, and then they came across the road into my shop. They as good as forced their way through the shop into the backyard, and there they photographed Miss Porteous's bathroom window. Then one of the cameramen put a pound note into my hand and said, "On top of the ladder." Well, the ladder was still there, so I climbed up, and they photographed me on top of it, pointing at the window. By afternoon, the crowd was packed thick right across the street. Then four men came up and said they were newspaper men, and could I give them the facts about Miss Porteous? Before I could speak, they pushed into the shop, they shut the door. Then I saw there were not four of them, but 12. And they fairly hammered me with questions. What was Miss Porteous like? How long had she been there? About the bathroom? About her hair? I was flustered, and I said something about her hair being a little reddish. And one of the newspaper men said, "Ah, now we're getting somewhere. Carrots!" And they all laughed. Then another said, Everybody says this woman was an actress. But where did she act? I don't know, I said. You live next door this time, you don't know. Well, I said, she was different. Eccentric? No, I wouldn't say that. About her acting, they said, you must have heard something. Then I remembered, once at a rehearsal of the Chorus Society, her name had come up, and somebody had said something about her having been in Othello. Othello? What was she, Desdemona? Well, I said, I don't know if it's strictly true or not. I can't vouch for it. And this man that was seen, they said, what was he like? I said, I hadn't seen him, but my wife had. So they had her in. They questioned her. They were nice to her. But they put down, as in my case, things she didn't say. Yellow tie, dark, how dark, foreign-looking, actor. They questioned us all that afternoon. The next morning, the placards of the morning newspapers were all over Claypole. Shot actress, full story. It was my story. But somehow, as it appeared in the papers, it wasn't true. And the headlines. Search for shot actress assailant goes on. Police anxious to interview foreigner with yellow tie. Real-life Desdemona dead in bathroom. It was Saturday. That afternoon, Claypole was besieged by hundreds of people who'd never been there before. They climbed in over the fence of my back garden and trampled on the flower beds. All the tea shops in Claypole that day were crowded out. We had reporters and photographers and detectives tramping about all that day and the next. That Sunday morning, I missed going to chapel for the first time in almost 10 years. My wife couldn't sleep. She was absolutely exhausted and kept crying. That afternoon, the crowds began again, thicker than ever. A man started to sell souvenir photographs of Claypole High Street at threepence each, and it was as though he were selling pound notes or bits of Miss Porteous's hair. That afternoon, I went for a walk, just for a few minutes to get some air. Everybody I knew stopped me and wanted to talk, and one man said, "Ah, don't tell me she lived there all alone for nothing. She knew her way about." The inquest was held on the Monday. It lasted 3 days. My wife and I were witnesses, and it came out that Miss Porteous's name was not Porteous at all, but Helen Williams. Porteous had been her stage name. It also came out that it was not clear if Miss Porteous had been murdered or if she had taken her own life. All this made it much worse. The fact of Miss Porteous having had two names gave her an air of mystery, and the doubts about her death increased it. It began to go all over Claypole that she was a woman of a certain reputation, that the milliner's shop was just a blind. As the story of Miss Porteous grew, the story of my own part in it grew. Suddenly people began to crowd into my shop. They looked at old watches and clocks that needed repairing, brooches that had been out of fashion for years and needed remodelling. By the weekend, the shop was never empty, and by the end of the day, my wife and I were worn out by the extraordinary mad rush of business. We rested in bed all day Sunday, exhausted. I was in a dilemma, I tell you. I wanted to close the shop, but somehow it wasn't possible. Business is business, and death is death, and you've got to live. And so I kept open. Then the police came to see me again. The man with the yellow tie had not been found, and they wanted my wife and me to go to the station to check the statements we'd given. We were there 3 hours. When we got back, there was a crowd of 50 people round the shop. The rumour had gone round that I'd been arrested. Well, once that started, nothing could stop its consequences. It was all over Claypole that I knew more than I would say. It began to be said that my wife and I were busybodies. How else had we come to be squinting in Miss Porteous's bathroom? How else had we seen the man with the yellow tie in the backyard? We were peeping Toms. I never heard anyone actually say this, but there was one thing I did hear him say. I used to belong to the Temperance Club, the Melrose, and in the evenings I went there to play billiards and cards and so on. Well, next to the billiard room was a small cloakroom, and one evening, as I was hanging up my coat, I heard someone at the billiard table say, "Old Sprake knows a thing or two. Think I should be here if I had as many quid as the times old Sprake's been upstairs next door. Actress, my eye. Ever struck you it was funny old Sprake knew the colour of that nightgown so well?" I put on my coat again and went out of the club. I was trembling. What I'd heard seemed to be the crystallisation of all the rumours that were going around Claypole, that not only was Miss Porteous a loose woman, but that I'd had illicit relations with her. Not only had she been murdered, but I knew more than I would say about her murder. I didn't know what to do. I had to defend myself, so I hit upon the idea of saying the same thing to everybody. "I just don't know," I would say. I said to everyone, just that, "I just don't know." I suppose I must have said those words hundreds of times a day. And when a man goes on repeating one sentence hundreds of times a day, it's only natural that people should begin to wonder about him. So it crept around Claypole that I was a little odd. Well, I couldn't sleep. And when I looked into the glass after a restless night, I saw a face made wretched by the strain of unresolved anxieties. I felt near to breaking. And then something important happened. The police found the man with the yellow tie. He was a theatrical producer named Prideaux, and the police found him at Brighton. The fact that his name was French and that he was found at Brighton at once established him, in the public mind, as the murderer of Miss Porteous. But he had an explanation. He hadn't come forward because he was afraid. Miss Porteous was an old friend, and her death, he said, had upset him terribly. It was true that he'd seen Miss Porteous just before her death, because Miss Porteous had invited him to come and see her. She needed money. The millinery business was not paying its way. She feared bankruptcy, and apparently had threatened to take her life. Prideaux promised to do what he could, and he was back in London early that evening, which the porter of the hotel verified. It was also proved that people had seen Miss Porteous alive, walking out on the golf course as late as 5 o'clock that day. But Prideaux was in London by that time. Well, that was the end of that. It was established beyond doubt that Miss Porteous had taken her own life. And suddenly all the mystery and sensation became nothing. The papers were not interested in her any longer. And her name has never appeared in the papers again. Well, I no longer live at Claypole. All those rumours that went round were enough to drive me mad, but they were also enough to kill my wife. It was the rumour and shock and worry that killed her, and she died just after the facts of Miss Porteous's death were established. A month later I gave up the business and left town. Poor Miss Porteous. She took her life because she was hard up. There's no more to it than that. But nobody in Claypole ever believed that. In Claypole, they know that she was murdered. They know, because the paper said so, that she was a strange and eccentric woman, a loose woman. They know that she let men in and up the back stairs at a pound a time. They like to think that I was one of them, and that I knew more than I would ever say. They know all that happened to Miss Porteous, but they can never know how much has happened to me.